Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. This week at the Ohio State House, the Government Accountability and Oversight Committee passed out of committee HCR 10. Those of you that are regular listeners to this program understand that that is a resolution to support the State of Israel and to condemn anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. Let me read for you the press release that the Ohio Christian Alliance sent out this week. Today, members of the Ohio legislature took a positive step forward, pushing back against anti-Semitism by passing out of committee HCR 10, the resolution to condemn the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, and to condemn increasing incidents of anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. You know, unfortunately, there have been incidents of anti-Semitism that have continued on Ohio college campuses. And of course, most recently in Athens, Ohio, at Ohio University. Actually, on the eve of the most holy day on the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur, Nazi swastikas were drawn on the dormitories and on the sidewalks surrounding the campus. Officials at the university told Representative Andy Thompson that they were investigating the incident, and it is for these reasons that we strongly support HCR 10 and its passage today out of committee, and we're told that sometime in the next few weeks it will be on the House floor for a full vote and consideration. So call your state representative and urge them to support HCR 10, the resolution that supports the State of Israel and condemns anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses, and we thank you for doing that. You can also learn more at our website at ohioca.org. Well, this week, of course, we celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, in which Martin Luther nailed the 95 theses on the Wittenberg door. And this, of course, was symbolic of the launch of the Reformation. And this week, our good friend Bill Fetter of the American Minute, he actually put out a couple of emails in his American Minute daily to talk about John Adams and his reference in the American Revolution with the Reformation, and, of course, Martin Luther himself. Bill, welcome to the program.
Chris, great to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us today, and I really enjoyed your piece on John Adams. In fact, we resent that to our entire state list. I thought that it was so well written and documented of what you spelled out as far as his view of law and morality. Talk to our listeners about that.
Well, the Reformation was a turning point. A little background. The Muslims were invading Greece and destroying museums and libraries and churches and graves and artwork. And so the Greek scholars were fleeing to Florence, Italy, with all their Greek stuff, including their Greek New Testaments. And so this was called the Renaissance, where Western Europe is rediscovering Greek stuff. But they began to translate the Bible not just to Latin, but all the way back to Greek. And so Erasmus was the first one to print an entire New Testament from the Greek. And Erasmus was a friend of Martin Luther. And so as they're getting this new interest in original words in the Greek, it laid the foundation for the Reformation. So on October 31st of 1517, Martin Luther nails his 95 debate questions on the door of the Wittenberg Church. That was sort of the bulletin board for the community. And the Reformation starts. Well, he's called to a trial called the Diet of Worms. That would make anybody have indigestion. But the Holy Roman Emperor is Charles V of Spain. He's 21 years old. And he considered it an argument amongst monks. You got a whole lot of monks on one side and this one monk on the other. And so that's when Martin Luther was more or less declared outside of the law, and he was kidnapped. They thought he was going to die, but he was hidden in the Wartburg Castle by Frederick of Saxony there. And that then we see he translates the Bible from the Greek and Latin all the way into the German language. That's the Hochdeutsch dialect as the official language, dialect for Germany. This begins this Reformation. Now, Charles V, as the years go on, he realizes this is serious, but then the Muslims pick up and they conquer, attack Malta in the Mediterranean. They do the Battle of Lepanto. They're conquering. And so Charles V strikes a deal with the Protestants in the year 1555. And the Treaty of Augsburg lets every king decide what's going to be believed in his kingdom. And so he probably thought it was just going to be Catholics and Lutherans. But in the next century, it breaks into this domino effect of Europe where different kings believe different things. And if you didn't believe the way your king did, you fled. Theologically, Martin Luther's movement of focusing back on an individual's reading of the scripture sort of cut out the clergy, and it sort of undermined a hierarchical system that had been in place in Europe, and eventually gave birth to the idea of citizens ruling without a king. I get into that in England a little bit more, but ultimately it came to the colonies. And so if this was this polarity change in the direction of government from a top-down church government, top-down king government, to a bottom-up government. So church-wise, it was called the congregational form of church government, where the congregation got to vote. And then when the pilgrims got blown off course, they were going to go to Jamestown. They were 500 miles off course, and the captain says, it's too dangerous, you're going to have to get off. And they say, well, we don't know who's going to be in charge. There's no king-appointed person on our boat. They do something unique. They apply their congregational church government to their government. It's called the Mayflower Compact, where it says, we, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together to form a civil body politic, to enact laws that we think most meet, unto which we promise all due submission. It was revolutionary. The whole world was this divine right of kings. God gives the power to the king. He dispenses it through his appointed administrators. This is, again, a polarity change. It's a bottom-up, where the people decide who their leaders are going to be and what their laws are going to be. And so this influenced the New England colonies, particularly Connecticut with Thomas Hooker. It's called the Constitution State. And then it influenced the Declaration, where it says government by the consent of the governed, influenced the Constitution, where it's we the people form this to have a more perfect union, right? And so John Adams is acknowledging the role of the Reformation in the founding of America. You know, when they signed the Declaration of Independence, Sam Adams, who's considered the father of the Declaration, he said, this day, I trust, the reign of political Protestantism will commence. Over in England, there was statesman Edmund Burke, and he addresses Parliament in 1775. He says, all Protestantism is a sort of dissent, but the religion most prevalent in our northern colonies is the refinement on the principle of resistance. It is the dissidence of the dissent and the Protestantism of the Protestant religion. And so it's this idea that it's this bottom-up form of government from the church Reformation now applied to the government system. And then John Adams writes about this in his dissertation on canon and feudal law. Canon law was the church law, and then the feudal was the government law in Europe. He said, desire of dominion becomes an encroaching, grasping, restless, and ungovernable power. Tyranny, cruelty, lust was soon adopted by most of all the princes of Europe. The people were held in ignorance till God, in his benign providence, raised up champions who began and conducted the Reformation. From the time of the Reformation of the first settlement of America, knowledge gradually spread in Europe, but especially in England. And in proportion as that increased and spread among the people, tyranny lost strength. So it's like a teeter-totter. As the people became more educated and taking more responsibility for the government, it pulled the power away from a top-down form of government with a king.
Well, in reading from your American Minute from this week, and John Adams was stated in his writings, liberty cannot be preserved without a general knowledge among the people who have a right to knowledge as their great creator, who does nothing in vain, has given them understanding and a desire to know. Rulers are more than trustees for the people, and if the trust is insidiously betrayed or wantonly trifled away, the people have a right to revoke the authority and to constitute abler and better trustees. This is from John Adams' writings in which you were talking about this week. So without question, Bill, the Reformation and the spirit of evangelism, evangelicalism, had a very intertwined within our founding as a as an American republic.
Well, it is, and it's actually pretty simple. So if you can imagine a spectrum of power, one side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government, you get a king who rules by fear. No government is anarchy. No government, unless the people have internal morals. It's like everybody downloads a behavioral app on their iPhone. Instead of telling them where to turn in their car, it tells them how to act every day. But wait a second. Why would you follow an internal moral? What would motivate you to restrain yourself from a selfish temptation? Ancient Israel introduced into the world the key ingredient. A God who is watching everyone, he wants you to be fair, and he is going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me, he wants me to be fair, he's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in the back of your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country believes this, you can maintain complete order with no policemen following everybody around. Maximum liberty. Now, it only works with a God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says there's an infidel woman there. Nobody's around. You can rape her. It's okay. The God of the Bible says do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So our form of government without a king depends on the people being educated and having morals. But what motivates them to follow those morals is this God of the Bible. It's the sunlight that it provides the solar energy for the plant of freedom to grow, is this consciousness of accountability to God.
Well, that's right. No wonder John Adams stated, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. You know, reading from your email this week again, Adams stated in the dissertation on the canon of feudal law, let us study, he says, the great examples of Greece and Rome, the conduct of our British ancestors who have defended for us the inherent rights of mankind against foreign and domestic tyrants and usurpers, against arbitrary kings and cruel priests, in short, against the gates of earth and hell. Let the pulpit, he says, resound with the doctrines and sentiments of religious liberty. Your thoughts?
Well, he points out the pulpits resounding. And so they understood in America, the people are the king. And even the Pew Forum, P-E-W, Pew Forum, a few years ago, did a poll and identified that 70% of Americans identify themselves as Christian. Now, 20 years ago, it was 90%, but still 70% is a majority. And so if the majority of the people are, the country's ruled by the people, the majority of the people are Christian, that means they go to church, which makes the pastors in America, in a sense, counselors to the king. And so you have two types of counselors. One tells the king to go to sleep, shirk his responsibility, close his eyes, just be irresponsible. Another set of counselors comes in and throws a bucket of ice water on his congregation and says, wake up. You don't just have the right to vote in America. You're going to be held accountable to God for what happens in America. You are the king. And so people say, well, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Since when does the king sit on his throne and say, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do here? Hey, butler, come here. What am I supposed to do? It's like, no, it's your job to hear from God, get educated on the issues, and you tell your representatives what needs to happen. And the shoe's on the other foot. The responsibility is on us, the people's shoulders. I used a little example. Imagine visiting a king in the Old Testament, and you're going through the streets of Jerusalem, and you're witnessing murder, rape, and crime. You finally get into the king's chamber, and he looks up all worried at you, and he says, did you see all that crime coming in here? I wish somebody would fix it. And you reach over and tap the king on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you're the king. You're the one that's supposed to fix it. That's like somebody in America watching TV, seeing all the terrible stuff going on, saying, I wish somebody would fix it. hello, reach through the TV tube and tap you on the shoulder. You're the king. You're the one accountable to God to fix this mess.
You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. With us on the phone is author and historian Bill Fetter. In fact, Bill will be leading our tour of the return to Plymouth. In just 3 years, it will be the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrim's Landing at Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. And later this summer in 2018, the Ohio Christian Alliance will be sponsoring a tour to Plymouth Rock and also Freedom Trail in Boston, Massachusetts. If you'd like more information, you can go to our website at Ohio Christian Alliance or ohioca.org. You can just click on the contact information. Let us know that you're interested in joining us. We'll be taking a charter bus from Ohio to Plymouth, and we'll have reservations there. We'll give you all the information, but Bill Fetter will be helping us lead the tour, and we're going to have a great time really returning to Plymouth Rock and also walking Freedom Trail in Boston, Mass. Bill, again, continuing with this week and celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation and Martin Luther. And of course, there were so many great church reformers. I was listening to Pastor Erwin Lutzer of Moody Broadcasting, who was talking about the great church reformers of John Knox and John Huss, and so many who actually gave their lives, John Wycliffe, who gave their lives for the truth of the gospel and for the liberty in Christ. And I love what you put together this week of how it had such a bearing on our nation's founding, and with John Adams himself, who was a committed Christian and dedicated to the scriptures as well. Go on with your thoughts.
Well, there's an interesting study done by a Robert Woodbury, and he compared the countries where missionaries went to in the 19th century and how those countries were in the 20th century regarding prosperity and freedom. And he found a direct connection between where what he called conversionary Protestant missionaries went to. They educated the common people to read and to read the Bible. And when you read the Bible, you see these parables where Jesus tells the unjust guy, because he buried his talent rather than working to multiply it, and talks about being honest and so forth. And so it caused there to be a literate populace. Those countries rose and today have more freedom and more prosperity. So some missionaries, what he called Protestant conversionary missionaries, wanted to educate the populace, but other missionaries just wanted to educate the upper class, and it caused there to be a the same social pyramid, social structure in place. So they went from worshiping their pagan gods, but it was hierarchical, to now they're Christian, but it's still hierarchical. But so the concept that the Reformation causes the people to be able to read the Bible in their own language, that is a statistically documented phenomenon, that where the Protestant missionaries went to, they educated everyone to read, and those countries today are more prosperous. So again, it's this idea that the Reformation gave birth to the individual being personally responsible to God.
Well, that's right, and it was John Wycliffe who basically was putting the Bible in the common people's hands. And they were going around the countryside and passing out New Testaments. Of course, the Catholic Church persecuted him for it and were trying to corral him. But he continued by dispersing the Word of God as far as he could during his lifetime.
Right. It's interesting when you study the English Bible. Wycliffe in the 1300s, it was all hand-copied, because they had not invented the printing press yet, right? Gutenberg was 1450 when he invented. And so every single copy of Wycliffe's New Testament was hand-copied. Imagine that. And so when he was persecuted, they would round up those copies and burn them. John Huss did a similar thing in Prague when he translated scriptures into the Czech language. But once Luther comes along, his writings now can be mass-printed. It's sort of like he's taken advantage of a Twitter account. Instead of funneling stuff through the controlled media, he's immediately communicating with the people. Everybody gets to read the scriptures and undermine the social structure that all these elites had in place for a millennium.
Well, it's so hard for people to understand today because we have so much access to libraries, to online knowledge. Someone just has to do a search engine for any kind of topic, and it comes up instantly on their cell phone, their tablet, their desktop computer. But, you know, back in the times in which we're talking, only the literate and educated were able to have access even to writings. You know, reading the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin this summer, every book he could get his hands on, he would borrow books. And, of course, he thought that for our nation to be a nation born in that knowledge and freedom, it needed a library system. So he began actually a library exchange in Greater Boston. So, you know, you can see where these things were developed, of where knowledge was expounded upon and in the pursuit of knowledge. And, you know, the Bible says my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And so, you know, there's great freedom and liberty in Christ, and the Lord wants us to know things, but there were those who were trying to keep the people under by keeping information from them. Your thoughts?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I wanted to pick up with the storyline. After Martin Luther, you have 100,000 Muslims surrounding Vienna, Austria. And we begin to see that as the Muslims are encroaching on Western civilization, it moves further to the West. And they, again, had the Battle of Lepanto, the largest battle ever on the Mediterranean Sea. And Spain was using the gold from the New World to fight the Muslims, which is a good thing, right? It saved Western Europe.
Wasn't it Martin Luther that called for prayer for Europe because the Muslim threat of this this armada that was about to land in southern Europe was threatening, these Muslims were threatening to overrun Europe, and Martin Luther called for the church to pray. Is that not right?
He did, and as also John Calvin did the same thing. But then after they stopped the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto, 1571, rather than freeing the rest of the Mediterranean from Muslim control, Spain decided to take its invincible armada and squash the Reformation in England. And then they sent their what's called Spanish Furies. They sent the Iron Duke, the Duke of Alba, who just had his men rape and pillage all throughout Holland. It took an 80-year war of independence for Holland to get free of Spain. But it was the Queen Elizabeth who was there in England, and she has her Sir Walter Raleigh and Sir Francis Drake, and she gives her famous speech in 1588. I know I'm just a woman, but she said, I have the heart and stomach of a king and a king of England too, and I'll not let any king of Spain or European monarch invade my realm. And anyway, they stop the Muslims. I'm sorry, stop the Spanish, and that's when the Spanish Armada is smashed in a hurricane and opens up the rest of America to colonization by the Europeans and particularly the English.
We've come to the end of our program. Listen, Bill, thank you so much. It's so awesome that we could spend so much time with you. Give your website again for folks to visit, the American Minute.
Thank you, Chris. My website's AmericanMinute.com.
Thanks, Bill, for being on the program, and we'll be talking to you soon. And then again, folks, if you'd like to join us on our trip, Return to Plymouth with Bill Fetter, we'll have more information and details of how you can register for that in the summer of 2018. We hope that you can join us. God bless. You've been listening to the Ohio Christian Alliance broadcast, News in Focus. We'll catch you next time. God bless.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
You tried to move on. You tried to put your life back together. Until one day, you see him. At the store. On the street. On your doorstep. The criminal who tore your life apart is walking free. But you might never know. Until you come face to face with him. Don't let this happen to more victims. Vote yes on Issue 1, Marcy's Law.
Issue 1, Marcy's Law, will guarantee constitutional rights for crime victims in Ohio. Marcy's Law will give crime victims equal standing in the criminal justice system, ensuring they are told how the process works, notifying them of court hearings, plea agreements, or the escape or release of the offender. We can't undo a crime once it's happened, but we can ensure crime victims are treated with dignity and respect by the criminal justice system. Vote yes on Issue 1, Marcy's Law. Paid for by Marcy's Law of Ohio.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about adoption here in the state of Ohio, and we're going to look at the numbers as far as adoption and also a personal story on adoption that I think you're going to find very interesting. Of course, we have an election that's coming up on November 7th, and there will be two statewide ballot issues that you'll be considering, Issue 1 and Issue 2. Issue 1, of course, is the Victims' Rights Legislation or Amendment. That's called Marcy's Law. The Ohio Christian Alliance is urging a yes vote on Issue 1, Marcy's Law. That information is on our website. We actually have a church bulletin insert that we're distributing across the state of Ohio to churches in our network. And if you'd like for your church to receive copies for distribution this Sunday or next, contact our office at 330-887-1922. And they'll ship them out to you. Again, that's educational information on ballot issues 1 and 2. Now, issue 2, of course, is getting a lot of attention because that is the pharmaceutical issue, and that will be on your fall ballot as well. Last week, we conducted an interview, a side-by-side pro and con interview with former State Representative John Adams, who was for the position, and then Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute, a conservative think tank here in the state of Ohio, gave his opinion as to vote no on issue 2. That's also on our website. It will also be part of today's second part of our program, so you want to stay tuned for that. Well, with that, I want to go to our special guest today who's with us on the phone and has a great story, a personal story on adoption, and that's none other than Secretary of State John Husted. And John has been our Secretary of State now for the last 7 years. He is finishing his second term. He is the 53rd Secretary of State here in the state of Ohio, and he's done a great job. Actually, a lot of good things have come out of his tenureship as Secretary of State. There's been a lot of election reform legislation that has moved through, and of course, he's had to oversee major elections here in the state of Ohio. John, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you today.
Well, thanks for taking the time out to join us, and we're going to get to your personal story here in a minute on your adoption story, but of course, we have an election that's coming, a lot of municipal races, local issues will be on the fall ballot for folks. Any word on the election from the Secretary of State?
Well, you know, it is an election. You know, these odd year elections tend to be ones that people are not paying attention to as much as they would, say, a presidential election. But it doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of issues that the voters will be considering that will have an impact on their lives. You mentioned the statewide issues. Certainly every voter in the state has a stake in those. but there are a lot of local elections, whether those are school levies, mayoral races, a lot of issues affecting the quality of your communities and the rate, your tax rates will be decided here in the coming weeks. And it's important that everybody can get out there and make their voice heard.
Well, that's right. And to look at the literature that comes in the mail, of course, and they have to vet that a little bit. And you have to, sometimes it's difficult to see all about a candidate, especially we get a lot of requests for information on judges. We don't have much to provide as far as an organization in that regard because, for instance, we've tried to survey judges in the past on the state level, and they have, for the most part, declined. Even though the Supreme Court said that they could fill out a candidate survey, they've chose not to. They say they don't want to prejudice their position. Whatever. But there are some sites that provide profiles on the judicial nominees. But I think the best way
Worth noting that you can go get a sample ballot off of the Secretary of State website or your local Board of Elections website, so that you can first know who the candidates are that you will be voting on. A lot of times voters are unaware of some of those judicial races, as you make the point. And it's important that you know who's on there. And then you can do a little advanced research either by going to your local party website, if you're of a particular political persuasion, or look at the candidates' websites themselves, just to kind of get a little more flavor about who they are, what they stand for, what their history is, and who is supporting them.
That's right. And another way is to get out on a candidate's night where it's an open forum to meet the candidate, discuss with them, and bring your question to them personally. And I've always found that to be very helpful myself personally on a local level. So it just takes a little engagement, get off the sidelines, get in and get out there and meet the candidates and then make a thoughtful choice. Your website, of course, is very easy to navigate. It has a lot of helpful resources. Tell us again about the Secretary of State's website.
MyOhioVote.com. MyOhioVote.com is the easiest way to get there. That takes you into the Secretary of State website. You can type in your name and address, and it'll pop up your local voting location, allow you to get a sample ballot, those kinds of things as you work. We work you through your local boards of elections and the like. So those are good things to always keep in mind and remember. And I know, Chris, we talk about this a lot. You know, our goal is to make Ohio a place where it's easy to vote and hard to cheat. And we're doing our best, fighting the good fight on that front to keep the voter rolls cleaned up. We've removed almost 600,000 deceased voters from the voter rolls. We cross-check on immigration issues to make sure that no non-citizens are on our voter rolls. But there have been 112 elections in the last 4 years that have been decided by one voter tied. And so these are especially the low voter turnout elections where one vote can really make the difference. So don't write it off. Get engaged. Make sure your voice is heard.
You know, one of my funnest things, John, is when they have to decide a race with a coin flip because it's tied.
That's exactly right. We've had those. You also, you know, you could also draw cards. I mean, literally, there was a mayor that was picked in a couple election cycles ago because I believe he drew a 10 of spades and his opponent drew a 7 of hearts in a contested mayoral race that was tied. So it was tied on election night, tied after the recount. They had to draw cards, and the high card won. And literally, just think about that: one more voter, and the other candidate would have been the victor.
That does make it interesting. You got to love our form of Republican democracy. You know, I do have my own little story. When I ran for state office some years ago, it was in a heavily Democratic district. I was running as a Republican, but we ran a good, positive campaign on both sides, myself and my opponent. Well, here comes election night, and it was the year 2000. Of course, it was a presidential election, and no one knew who was the president that night, if you remember, because it was decided later on because it was so close coming out of Florida. But as I went into the reception that night, people said, "Hey, you're beating Bob Otterman 2-1. And the crawler on the bottom of the screen of the local TV said that Long was beating Otterman 2-1. I'm like, that can't be. And here, the Akron Beacon Journal went ahead to the press in their early edition, it said, "Long Republican beats Otterman 2-1. And so I had that paper. I still have it to this day. Of course, he won.
You're like Dewey beating Truman.
Pretty much. They had the numbers flipped. So I called him the next morning. I said, Bob, I'm holding the paper. It says I beat you 2-1. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll share the seat with you. Well, we had a good laugh about it. He since has passed on. He did serve in the legislature.
That's right. I served with Bob Otterman.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good guy, and sorry to see him go. But anyways, we had a good laugh on it, but it was fun stuff. Well, again, folks, we want to encourage you to get out and vote on November 7th. Don't let others make the decision for you. Go out and use your constitutional right and privilege and cast that vote. Well, Mr. Secretary, we invited you on today to talk about a very personal and precious story, actually, when it comes to you. And when you, before you were Secretary of State, you served in the Ohio House of Representatives. In fact, you served as Speaker of the House. And, of course, there was several pieces of legislation that came up during your tenureship, and they were on adoption. Tell us how one of those led to a very personal issue for you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, when we were working on adoption legislation during my first term as Speaker of the House, I got the question from the folks at the Adoption Network if I was curious about, if I knew who my biological mother was. And I always knew I was adopted. And I said, no, I didn't. But well, they said, well, would you like to know? And I said, you know, I've always wanted to write her a letter to say thank you. Because I imagine that a young woman who gave up her baby and never knew what happened in the future might just wonder what had happened to that little child that she gave up. And I wanted to say thank you. And so they did the research, and I went home and I drafted a letter and told her about how blessed I was to have such a wonderful wife and three great kids. And I was Speaker of the Ohio House, and I just wanted to say thank you and let her know that everything turned out all right. But unfortunately, she died in 1996, and so I never got a chance to send her that letter. But I found out just how fortunate I was after I learned the circumstances under which her adoption, or my adoption, occurred. She had lost her husband, and I was told somehow in connection with Vietnam, I don't know the details, but she already had two boys, a three-year-old and a one-and-a-half-year-old. And she was struggling to get along and had met another man and became pregnant with me. And he had said that he would support her, but he didn't want another mouth to feed, and he wanted her to have an abortion. And she struggled with that, and eventually contacted Catholic Social Services and said that she wanted to choose an adoption. And fortunately for me, she did. I lived the first month or two of my life in a foster home, and then I hit the lottery because I got adopted, and I got two great parents that taught me great values of hard work and personal responsibility and faith and just, you know, just doing the right things in life. And you know, I joke with my dad every once in a while because he hears me say that I hit the lottery when I got adopted. He said, "Well, it didn't come with any money," and I said, "Well, it didn't, but it came with more than that. It came with a great family and the right kind of values. And if you have that, then that's all you need in life, because you can make your way in the world if you got a good start." And I'm very blessed to have that. And you know, and Chris, I never shared that story until about 6 years ago, because I just, you know, I was a private person, and I admit that it was kind of an emotional thing for me. But the first time I told it, I had all of these people that came up to me and told me their stories about adoption, how either they were adopted or they had adopted somebody. And it made me realize, you know, that there's some power in it, so that other people know, A, that they're not alone, that they know how the decisions of a mom who offers her baby for adoption and parents who adopt or become foster parents can really change the direction of a child, change the direction of the world. And so I share that to both remind me to count my blessings and to hopefully inspire others to be the light for somebody else in the world.
Yeah, I'm looking at this great picture. I actually captured it off a video of Ohio Right to Life, who tells your story in a little 3-minute video, which is really precious. We're going to put that link on our website, too, for people to listen to. It's a great picture of your parents, your wife, and your kids. And, it's a wonderful thing. And what a wonderful story. And that your mom, your natural birth mother, she reached out, and Catholic services were there to help her to make that mm-hmm. right choice and to bring you into this world. Now, you were adopted when you were just a few months old. Is that right?
Yeah. And also, you know, part of it that I can add to this is that, you know, I was born, it was in Detroit, Michigan, and where my mother lived, and my birth mother. And it was 1967. It was right in the middle, if you know what happened in 1967, that was right in the middle of the Detroit riots.
Yes.
And so you can imagine the atmosphere that she was having to contend with in her life, and how she must have struggled, and how that must have been hard, and how, you know, you're right, Catholic Social Services, somebody being there to help, made the difference for me and made the difference for her. And I'd like to think that making the most of that blessing and trying to serve others and trying to do good things for the world as a public servant. It changed certainly my world and anybody whose life I've been able to touch.
Well, what a fantastic story and a precious story of your parents, your adopted parents, and of course your life and achievements, and your birth mother, God bless her, who chose life. And you know, during your tenure as a legislature, one of the things we did was launch a Choose Life license plate. And
that's right.
We were able to get that through the Ohio legislature. It's still out there. Folks can get the Choose Life license plate, which portion of it goes to the adoption centers and crisis pregnancy centers in each of the counties. They can make a grant application for that, receive funds, and that's through the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. It goes into a trust. So that's continued since 2003. We've had the Choose Life license plate. Not only does it promote life and adoption as a slogan on Ohio license plates, it also helps raise monies for those counseling services in those crisis pregnancy centers and adoption groups around the state to help them continue the good work of adoption. In a follow-up to go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's very important, because if you're a young woman and you find yourself in that spot, you know, any bit of support that you can get that helps you choose life and let you know that people care and will be there to support you and help you give life into the world is, you know, can make all the difference. And so we have to be for policies that encourage life, and we have to be for actions out there that help make it happen.
That's right. And so we're pleased to see that adoption is on the increase. Also, one of the things to help adopting families, as your dad said, it didn't come with any money. Well, we're trying to turn that around in this sense, is that at least give these families a tax credit. And, of course, when I first started into this, I think there was a $500 state tax credit. And we said, well, you know, why don't we attempt to triple that? And so we did. We got it up to $1,500. And then a few years later, the good folks at Ohio Right to Life thought, well, you know what, we can do better than that. And so they bumped it up to $10,000 as a state tax credit for adopting families. You know, I asked our good mutual friend, Bob Burney, who hosts a program in Columbus, Ohio, a Drive Time talk show, and I said, and he adopted several children, and I said, well, Bob, would this help? He said, absolutely it would help. That would have been a blessing to us.
It's expensive. It's expensive, and the tax credit does help. And, you know, and honestly, if you're taking children out of foster care and giving them permanency through adoption, it ultimately saves the taxpayers money as well. It improves the child's life. It's financially responsible. And so those things are the right kind of pro-family things to do with our tax policies.
That's right.
Families and children and healthy lives for children.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue.
Well, you know, John, as we're talking about this, and again, folks, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Secretary of State John Husted, who's sharing about his adoption story. If you just tuned in, you'll be able to hear this program in its entirety on our website at ohioca.org. Later today, it will be posted up. But, you know, as we talk about this, obviously, your parents, your adopted parents, you know, you're going to have a relationship with them for a long time. In foster care, and it's great the folks that get involved with foster parents. But what we're hearing so often is once they're 18 and there's no funding associated with that ongoing relationship, for most of these kids who have been in foster care, they don't have a long-standing relationship with any of the foster parents that they had previously lived with. And what we're finding is people at the age of 18 just kind of thrown out on their own, almost abandoned. And they have to make decisions. I mean, I couldn't make decisions at age 18. I needed my dad still. You know, I talked to my dad until he passed away a few years ago. And he was always an advisor and consultant and an encourager and that kind of thing. And the downside about foster parenting is that these kids just don't have that. And, you know, that's really something that's kind of a crisis. What your thoughts on that?
Well, one of the things that we have done, though, is we've extended the law to allow the foster relationship to exist to the age of 21, which has been an upgrade in the law that has helped. But you, to your point, yes, when you're 18, it's hard to be ready for life today, particularly if you've had a tough background and nobody has prepared you to do it. Understand that many kids, and I was just with a bunch of them. I was just with a group of about 500 foster kids a couple weeks ago who are ready to age out and have to go out into life. And you know, you have to, you know, understand a lot of these kids, you know, that means that they don't have either of their biological parents in their lives or either of their parents, their guardians, whatever, in their lives at that point in time. They've bounced around. They've been either physically, emotionally, sexually abused in some cases. They have, you know, emotional scars. They have trust issues. It's hard for them to trust people because the adults in their lives have always let them down. And they lack, a lot of them lack self-confidence or belief that they can do it. And, you know, one of the things when I'm talking with kids like that, I share my story and say, look, you can, you know, this is America. And I know your path, the mountain that you're climbing may be a little steeper than others, but you got to believe in yourself. There are adults that you can reach out to, including I tell them to call my office. You know, if things are going bad and you got nobody else to turn to, call us. You know, we want to help you. We want to help you make good choices and build the foundation for a successful life. And so everything that we can do to build family, to build a support network for young people critical to their success in life, because, you know, we know how to fix the problems of the 5-year-old. It's hard to fix the problems of a 25-year-old or a 35-year-old. And so the younger we can get them into stable environments and to help prepare them for life, the better off we will be, they will be, our society will be.
Well, that is awesome that you're having that kind of engagement with them, John. That's really awesome. And, you know, your personal story is very impactful, I'm sure, to them as well, and an inspiration, quite honestly. And so, you know, thank you for telling your personal story. It means a lot to people to be able to see that, hey, here's our Ohio Secretary of State. He was adopted, and he was adopted into a wonderful family. And, you know, really, there's nothing that can hold you back in life. And to encourage those mothers who are struggling with a decision to choose life, to choose adoption.
Yeah.
It's a viable option. It's a way forward for them.
And, you know, and families come in many forms. Adoptions come in many forms. Some of them are when they're younger children like me. I mean, look, I don't think of myself as, in my daily life, I don't think of myself as being adopted. I think of my parents as my parents. But I also know that there's more to the story. And were it not for the choices made by my biological mother and my parents who adopted me, my life would be very different. And I'm a blessed person. And in our nation, we should share our blessings, and particularly with helping as many children as we can grow up and become productive, lead productive lives.
Well, and your life is evidence of that. Again, my special guest today, Secretary of State John Husted. And again, get out there and vote on November 7th. And John, thank you again for telling your wonderful adoption story. It means so much to so many. God bless you, my friend.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, folks, if you'd like more information about what's going to be on your fall ballot, you can visit us at our website at ohioca.org. God bless. We'll see you next time.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.